side, for the sun always shines wherever you go. She smiled at him, and he added, "The special carriage I have ordered will be arriving here in a few minutes, and perhaps, madame, you would prefer to wait in the salon?" "No, I will wait here," the Duchess replied. As she spoke, she seated herself elegantly in an armchair in front of a writing desk. It stood in the center of the large reception hall of the Grand Hotel. She looked very attractive as she did so, wearing a gown that had obviously come from Paris. Precious stones glittered in her small ears and on the long, thin fingers of her ungloved hands. "Tell me," she inquired, as the manager hovered near her, "what has been happening in Lisbon since I was last here?" Even as she asked the question of him, she thought that it was most certainly a mistake. How could she bear to talk about Lisbon? The last time she had stayed in what has been called the most beautiful city in Europe, she had suffered an agony of misery that she wanted so much to forget. It had not been beautiful to her then. Yet it seemed so ridiculous that it was 32 years since she had last set foot in the country of her birth. She remembered, she felt now, every single brick and stone of the city of Lisbon. She recalled the sunshine glittering on the sea, the beauty of the ancient buildings, and the flowers which were bountiful everywhere she looked, especially those in the sellers' baskets around the stone fountains. When she had arrived last night at the hotel and then smelt the familiar fragrance that was essential Lisbon, she knew that she had really made a mistake. Her first impulse, therefore, on waking this morning, was to leave immediately and return to Paris. Yet, having forced herself to come to Portugal, now that she was here, her pride, which was very much part of her character, would not let her play the coward. Once and for all, she would lay the ghost that had haunted her for so long, a ghost that she was afraid she would carry with her to her grave. She had tried hard to forget when she was being acclaimed lavishly in France, in Monte Carlo, in Greece, in Hungary, in Vienna, and in London. She had told herself that she would not think of him, she would not remember him, and she would try and try to forget everything about him. And yet, he was always there. If she closed her eyes, she could see his handsome face as if it was yesterday. "Darling little Inez, I love you." It was his deep voice echoing down the years. "You are mine, mine completely, and I am the first and the only man in your life." Prophetic words. So prophetic that she felt even now, when she was approaching old age, like screaming because she could not escape from him. With an effort, she brought her thoughts back from the past. The manager was still hovering near her chair. "Tell me," she asked him,
"now that the Marquess Juan de Oliveira Vascones has died, who is living in the Palace d'Azul?"
"His son, madame. The Marquess Alvaro now lives there."
"His son?"
The Duchess repeated the words beneath her breath. "I did not know he had a son."
"Si, si, madame. The Marquess Alvaro is very much like his father. Very handsome, very charming. And let me see, he must be over 30 by now."
"I had no idea," the Duchess remarked in a faint voice. "Madame must have met the Marquess Juan when you were last here." For a moment, the Duchess closed her eyes. Then she said in a voice that did not sound at all like her own,
"Yes, I met him."
"You will recollect, madame, how magnificent the Marquess looked when riding one of his superb horses."
"And the new Marquess, his son?"
"He looks just like his father, and as a rider, he's admired by every young man in the whole country, while his horses win all our most important classic races."
The manager smiled before he added, "We are indeed very proud of the Marquess Alvaro, just as we were very respectful of his father." Again the Duchess closed her eyes. She could see the Marquess as the manager had described him, riding towards her on a huge black stallion. The moment she had seen him, it was as if he had just stepped down from the mountains that the simple people still believed were the habitation of the gods. He was certainly godlike to her, godlike from the moment she first saw him, and when he swept her into his arms and proclaimed that she was his, how could any girl, innocent...